On a Ryanair Greece to Germany flight, suffered serious injuries on Friday when he was partially sucked out of the plane after a window broke after takeoff. The man sustained neck and shoulder injuries as well as a friction burn. Passengers say they heard a loud bang, oxygen mask dropped, and the plane began losing altitude. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia. For 35 years, sharing what works in schools today and working to inspire new ways to learn tomorrow. More at edutopia.org.
Well, welcome to The Conversation on WVIK. It's a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Ben Goujon from Quad City Arts. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation on WVIK. Well, Ben Goujon, the Director of Community Engagement at Quad City Arts, this is a treat for me because I've gotten a chance to know you through some just volunteer things and hither and yon in the community, but we've never really had a chance to have a professional conversation about your work. And as you probably already know, I'm incurably nosy. So I want to find out more about what it is that you do. But first and foremost, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kai. It's a pleasure to be here and to have this conversation finally. We've talked about it for years.
Yeah, we have actually.
And here we are.
And it's kind of funny to think. I guess I've been here for a couple years now. I haven't totted it up lately. But anyway, just glad to have you here. And as is always the case, I like to start at the very beginning. I'm so proud that you call the Quad Cities home today.
I do.
But you grew up someplace else. Tell me about where you grew up and the kinds of things you did as a rapscallion kid.
Well, yeah, I grew up in a small town in northern Michigan on the shores of Lake Huron, a little town called Alpena, which is about 10,000 people. When I was growing up, it was a really industrial town. In the cement business, because we've got big limestone quarries up there. So there's a big cement plant, a big cement block plant. The quarry for a while was the largest North American quarry. So it was a very industrial kind of town and lots of hunting and fishing. And it's kind of, in the time I've been away, kind of turned into this kind of really warm, friendly, more touristy focused town. Mm-hmm. It was just a wonderful place to grow up. Of course, I hated it when I was a kid and wanted nothing more than to move away from it. But now that I'm more seasoned in life, I love going back there. It's a great place.
Well, I've been around it, but not through it. And while I ask you this next question, I'm going to ask you to tilt your microphone just a little closer to you because you got a beautiful voice. That's perfect. I just want to make sure everybody can hear that beautiful voice. But I mean, talk about an amazing name, right? Michigan's got a knack for that. There's Interlaken. Am I in yeah. Switzerland? No, I'm in Michigan. Alpena. Am I in the Austrian Alps? I don't know. But we were on our way up to Mackinac City and then the island. But I wanted to go into Alpena, just didn't work out. Next time. I'll have to go next time.
Well, it's where it's at in the state, you don't go through Alpena unless you're going to Alpena.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
But it's a beautiful drive along the Lake Huron coast there. And, you know, Lake Michigan gets all the hype for the beaches. Lake Huron's a little rockier, but I kind of like that.
Well, and there's something to be said. So when we were, you know, I'm cheap, right? So when my spouse and I got a chance to go to Mackinac Island, were we going to pay that big money? Heck no. We stayed at a very reasonable place on Mackinac City that actually had its own little beach. And you could see where they dumped a couple of dump trucks full of sand just so you could walk out a little. But it is a rocky shore.
It is a rocky shore.
It is. And that's a little bit different. I mean, Michigan has some interesting just wave action that does it. And I I've always wondered why that didn't happen in Huron, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but, you know, growing up, because I went to grad school at Western Illinois, and I had been in Michigan my whole life prior to that, like, and our house was literally three or four blocks from the Big Lake, and then I went to undergrad in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is about 45 minutes from Lake Michigan.
Was it Kalamazoo College?
No, I went to Western Michigan University.
A fantastic institution.
Yes.
Michigan has a wealth of both public and private joints, and so does Kalamazoo, public and private.
Yeah.
Great joints.
And Kalamazoo's a great town. Like, it's a great theater town, which, you know, is my background. When I came down to Western Illinois and someone said, oh, let's go to the lake. And I was like, all right, great. And we went to some man-made lake that I was like, this is a pond. This is not a lake.
Well, the other thing that I think blows people away is somewhere south of Madison, Rockford, something like that, and maybe in the Iowa side, somewhere south of that state line, all the lakes are mud-filled.
Yes.
You know, and if my mother, thanks to her, I got to spend a healthy chunk of my youth in Escanaba and in the UP.
Oh, don't you know,
Don't you know, Derry. And lakes are supposed to be fairly clear down to a certain depth. You can, you know, do all. And then when I'd start swimming with buddies at lakes around here, and Dad used to take us out canoeing at Lake McBride and Lake George, and it's a different kind of a...
It's a different kind of a lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Warm water.
And I would bring friends home, you know, at college. They'd come up to Alpena to visit and they'd be like, this is like an ocean.
It's an ocean.
Yeah.
The inland ocean.
Yeah.
There are some places in Lake Huron that I want to get while I still can. Did you ever get to Drummond Island? I've heard a million things, but...
I have never actually been there.
Really?
I've heard great things about that. Also, Beaver Island.
Oh, and Lake Michigan. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah,
you gotta go.
Michigan is, I feel like, just kind of full of these hidden gems that don't, you know. And the UP, I know you've spent time up there. Like, the UP is gorgeous.
Yeah,
it is just absolutely beautiful. Lake Superior is one of the most majestic things you can see, and pictured rocks and all of it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think we're going to be heading towards Pictured Rocks. We've got some grandkids who haven't seen it yet, would like to see it. I will dunk myself again in Lake Superior, which is a different experience than any other Great Lake.
Yes.
Because you start going numb in about 23 seconds.
Yes.
Yes. And
you know, once you get numb, it's not bad. You get used to it. But that initial getting in is definitely a shock to the system.
Oh, is it ever. And then, well, I will tell you this much. So earlier this summer, I had an opportunity to be in Iceland. And we went to a place that had the hot springs, but it also had the cold pool.
Yeah.
And I got in there, and there were two Icelanders, young men, and... they're just having a casual conversation, and I can't catch my breath because it was colder than Superior. And I'm just, oh, you are from America? That's so... Yeah. Can we talk later? I got to get...
I think I have a very small percentage of some Scandinavian roots.
We'll claim you.
But like... I love a cold plunge.
Yeah.
I love a sauna, a spa, a cold plunge. That's actually one of the things I miss the most from when I lived in New York, is there were lots of like bathhouses and saunas that you could go to.
Yeah.
And that like jumping from the sauna to the cold plunge and the, it's so refreshing, so invigorating.
Well, that's the one thing. When we still go up north, but the place that we go to does not have a sauna. And when we were kids, we would have access to one. And to jump out of a sauna when you've already sweated and then stop sweating, now you're getting your danger zone, and then to just run full sprint and crash into the waves, there's nothing like that on Earth. That's a great feeling. Anyway, I'm getting off to the track here. So you went to Western Michigan for the purpose of, let me not get too far ahead. When did you discern, because you, I can't wait to hear more about your career in theater, but when did you discern that as the course you wanted your life to take?
Yeah, I had dabbled in theater starting from when I was like 9 or 10 years old and doing school plays and things like that and through high school. But it was really my junior year of high school, I got cast in a production of The Crucible. and I played John Proctor, and it was literally one of those, I've seen the meme that says, like, high school girl, after 12 years of dance lessons and voice lessons, I'm proud to be the third ensemble member from the left in our school production. Mm. High school boy, my English teacher's making me play the lead in the show. And it was really one of that. Like, I had done some theater and was and liked doing it, and our English teacher was like, hey, guys, I'm doing this show and I need actors. It's not going to hurt your grade if you come out and audition. And so I auditioned and got the lead, and that was where I really started to fall in love. Mm. But it was always kind of like my, maybe I'll get a theater minor kind of backup plan. And then when I was about 19 and I was going to our community college up in Alpena, and all I was doing with my time was theater. Mm. Like, we had, for a town of its size, we had a community theater. We had a small kind of semi-professional theater in town, and the college theater. And so I was doing, you know, 10, 11, 12 shows every year. I was just constantly in theater, and I kind of had the realization of, like, what am I doing? This is the thing I love. This is the thing I want to be doing. And so then once I finished at community college, then I transferred down to Western Michigan and became a theater major down there.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And then was there any bit of a respite between bachelor's and graduate? Did you do some things then, or did you head straight over?
Okay. No, I did. I graduated at Western Michigan in 01, December of 01. And I moved home for a year to get some bearings and worked at the local theaters there. And then I moved back to Kalamazoo and ran a small storefront theater there with a friend of mine from school. He was the artistic director and I was the assistant artistic director. And it was just kind of the two of us on staff. So we, you know, we picked the season, we did the fundraising, we got the sponsorships, we built the sets, we hung the lights, we painted the floors and the walls, and we did all the things, and, you know, both did some directing and some acting and ran that for a couple of years before we both decided to go to grad school.
Yeah. Yeah. How did WIU get on your radar screen?
I had gone to an audition, and I had never heard of Western Illinois University before. And I had gone to, there's a big kind of theater audition called Midwest that is summer stocks from around the Midwest who converge in St. Louis, and it was on the campus of Webster. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, there's 50 or 60 theaters that there, and you go and you do your 2 minutes of your monologue or your song or whatever. And so I had gone down there to just audition for summer stock jobs. And Western Illinois used to have a program, and I think they're trying to bring it back, called Summer Music Theater. Mm. And they called me back, and I was like, I did not sing in my audition. Like, I was interested in doing Chekhov and Miller and all the greats.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did you call me back? And I went in, and they said, well, you know, our head of acting's not here, but he saw your audition and would love to talk to you about grad school. And so I connected with him, who Bill Kincaid, who's now retired, but went down to Western Illinois. And that was the first time I'd ever really been in Illinois outside of Chicago.
Right, right.
And as I'm driving down 67, this truck passed me that had three dead boars in the back of it. There's nothing but corn. And I literally thought, where am I going? And I got down to Macomb, and I spent a couple days talking with Bill and knowing the program. And I was like, he's so smart about theater and acting. And I was like, this is the person I want to learn from.
Hmm.
And, you know, I had a full tuition waiver and a stipend for grad school as a fellow. So I went to Macomb for 3 years, and that is where I met my now wife, Liz.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There was some time in between from when we met there just as neighbors and then reconnected later in life. And
And she's still part of Western, right?
Or is it, no, she is working with Every Child now.
Oh, she's at Every Child. See, this is why I need these updates here.
Yeah.
But I know that she and you are both proud alumni of Western, and we're very,
very
grateful
so.
For the connections we have with Western in the Quad Cities. But you mentioned this interregnum between then and your marriage, which is a lovely, lovely part of your life story. But in that interim, you got to do some really amazing things out east. Tell me about that. How did you get from Macomb to Manhattan?
Well, from the first time I visited New York was, and this was such a fun trip because some buddies of mine in college just like left Detroit at about 7 p.m., drove all night and drove into New York to visit the city. But from the minute I stepped there, I was like, oh my gosh, I absolutely love the energy of this place. And so after grad school, I spent a little time doing some theater around Illinois and Indiana and then headed off to Manhattan and kind of eventually, you know, after finding my footing there, I ended up kind of working my way into the film and television world and did some TV shows, did a boatload of commercials, some independent films. I was on a billboard in Times Square for a while, which was kind of cool.
Love it.
So it was a full pursuit of the career as the actor. I was going to be the next great thing.
Well, I want you to do some name and star dropping, that kind of thing. But I know you've shared with me that you had a part on a favorite program in the Swanson household, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
Tell me about that. How did you land that and what was the part?
Yeah, so I was in the second episode, the third episode of season two.
Okay.
And the role was that of Ed Grieg, who was a representative of the telephone company. And the scene, it was just one scene, but it was very fun to do. Was a scene with Susie Borstein, who played the manager.
Oh, yeah. She's brilliant.
Or Alex Borstein.
Yeah.
The character is Susie. Alex
Susie,
Borstein.
Right.
And she had gotten a phone so she could be Midge's manager, and she got her first phone bill, and it was astronomic. So she calls me to complain, and I'm the representative at the phone company. So I got to be on set for a couple of days while we filmed her side of the scene and my side of the scene, and it was, I mean, the costumes and the sets on that show were just incredible.
So detailed.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
And it had been one of my favorite shows before. I got that through my agent, and it was a really great experience. And that's actually the show. I had done a couple other shows previously, Law and Order and I think it was The Blacklist maybe. But that was the show that got me my SAG card.
Law and Order, another favorite.
Yeah.
So many greats have been part of that show. Who were some of the cast members when you were there?
Mariska, of course,
yes,
was there. It was in the Christopher Maloney was not part of the cast, but Mariska was there. And so I played the head juror, the jury foreman. And so we were on set filming for several days, you know, typically in the background, but then I got to deliver the verdict, you know, and this was my first network show that I did. So it was kind of the first, like, you
That's
know,
huge.
And every New York actor, like Law and
That's
Order is
want.
Part of the rights.
That's what you want.
But I remember so specifically the day that Mariska joined us on set, because there was this buzz in the studio of just like, Mariska's coming. Mariska's on her way. She's done hundreds of episodes of that show. And it was so kind of inspiring as a film actor to watch her like come in and be like, okay, what's the shot? Great. I'm going to look here. I'm going to look here. I'm going to do this. You got it? Great. Okay. Bam, bam, bam. And just like, she was a machine. Just, you know, it's second nature to her.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that is
yeah.
her world.
Yeah.
Aww. So that was really cool to just get to see the, you know, and you could see everyone in the cast just kind of straighten up a little bit when Mariska came
yeah.
in. Cause it's like, oh, okay.
Sure.
She is the show.
Oh, that's
so that amazing. Was really awesome.
Just back to Maisel for a second. I didn't realize this maybe the last, when you told me that story, but was there any explanation as to why they gave you the name of Norway's most famous composer, Edvard Grieg?
not that I know of.
Those guys got to come up with names somewhere, right?
Ed
Grieg. I love it. That's
well,
it.
And you know, I should have thought of that because there was a time when I was, you know, as an actor, we're always getting side hustles in between gigs. And I was working at this Italian restaurant in Brooklyn Heights. And the creators of Maisel, whose name is completely escaping me right now, were semi-regulars there. and is like, I was on your show last week. What would you like for dinner? but I should have asked them that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Fun things. Yeah. But it is hard to make a career that way. And I just wonder if that was, what were some of the factors? I guess what I'm getting to here, and just so you know, friends, my guest is Ben Goujon from Quad City Arts. But of course, we haven't even gotten to the Quad City Arts yet. But I'm curious to know how we managed to get you back here in the west coast of Illinois.
Yeah, I moved here in 2019, and 2018 was what on paper was the best year of my career. You know, I had done like 7 or 8 network television shows. I had a huge Samsung commercial campaign that was out. So on paper, everything looked great. And I was pretty unfulfilled by it.
No, I get that.
And, you know, I kind of had the realization of, like, these film acting jobs felt like sugar rushes, you know? Hmm. You get the rush of booking the job, the rush of being on set for a couple of days, and then there was just a letdown. Mm-hmm. And an acting career is full of disappointment and rejection. Like, that's the name of the game.
That's what comes with it.
You know, I was rejected from jobs about 93% of the time, and I was a working actor in New York without another job for several years. But with that, I had gotten hired to go be a guest director at Findlay University in Ohio. And I realized how much I missed the rehearsal room. I missed the process of theater. Mm. I missed working with young people and helping them, you know. So there's kind of a, like, there was this desire to put your hand down the rungs of the ladder and help pull people up.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Don't ask me why this is on my radar screen, Ben, but you're reminding me of a quote from a fellow named Carl Friedrich Gauss, right? And just let this sit for a second. It is not knowledge, but the act of learning, not possession, but the act of getting there, which grants the greatest enjoyment. So what you just described made me think that way. So yeah, you were getting some great stuff, but it was more about the attainment, the journey. Right?
Yeah, and even as like a theater performer now, I've realized the thing I love is the rehearsal process. Mm. Performance, like, do it once and that's good. You know, longer runs of shows, you start to feel like a trained monkey. It's like, I'm going to go out and do the show and ta-da. But it's the rehearsal process and the discovery and to me is so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got a long way to go on this journey because I also plan to be asking you about writing and all the other things you've done. And we want to talk about the amazing work that Quad City Arts does in building access to the arts across our community. But this is the time we have to step aside for just a quick moment to remind you that you're listening to The Conversation on WVIK with this week's guest, Ben Goujon, who's the Director of Community Engagement for Quad City Arts. We'll have more on the program in a minute. And as long as we're talking art, I want to let you know that next week's guest will be Leslie Dupree, who, among many other things, is a docent at the Figge Art Museum. So stick around, friends. The Conversation on WVIK will be right back after this brief intermission. We hope that you'll stay tuned and stick around for more with Ben Goujon.
Support for WVIK comes from Impact Life, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information about the need for blood products and services at bloodcenter.org. And support for WVIK also comes from Golder Care Solutions, offering advice about preserving assets, planning for the nursing home, and navigating Medicaid. Golder Care Solutions has been serving the Quad Cities since 2008. More information is at goldercare.com. And support for WVIK comes from the Regional Development Authority, distributing funds from the Rhythm City Casino Resort to help make the Quad Cities a more vibrant and inclusive community. Learn more at rdauthority.org.
I'm Steve Anditch from Rock Island, and WVIK is my NPR station.
Welcome back to the conversation on WVIK and a chat with this week's guest, Ben Goujon, Director of Community Engagement for Quad City Arts. And I promise we're going to get to that job, but your backstory is just so cool. And so when you came here, one of the things that I got to learn about you is not only do you know a lot about acting, directing, producing, and like you did in Kalamazoo, painting sets and everything in between, but also writing plays. So give me an insight into that part of your career.
Well, and I will say that writing and I have a very fickle relationship. I do not have the discipline to call myself a writer because the real writers I know, they can sit down and put words on a paper. Mm-hmm. I am a inspiration-based writer. but, you know, kind of the first, I had written some short plays and things like that, and some poetry and some, you know, kind of fiction-based things, just, you know, more as a hobby. The first play I wrote, and I co-wrote this with Alex Richardson, who's a local theater artist, and he has his theater company, Barely There. And but the Old Moline Public Library, the Sound Conservatory, Andrei Kozlowski, who's over in Poland or Ireland now, he did his grand opening, and we went down there, as you know, we had collaborated with him before, and I saw the space and I said, oh my gosh, this is a play.
Wow.
And so as any true entrepreneur and theater artist, the first thing I did was put out a press release because it was going to force myself to go follow through with it.
I love it.
And so, you know, I had this idea for a story, and so I kind of fleshed it out and wrote some dialogue, and then Alex and I worked together to kind of continue fleshing out that story, which became the first show of the Rock Island Tunnel Company, which was called I can't even remember what we called our play.
Well, and I remember when that production came around. So it was a wonderful...
The Stacks.
It was a labyrinthine plot.
Yes. Well, and I had gotten involved in a... when I was in New York, the immersive theater movement was something that really took hold, specifically with the production of Sleep No More, which was this retelling of the Scottish play based over six floors of an old hotel, and you just wandered around through this place and the story unfolded around.
For non-theater types, I'm going to save you on this one.
Yeah.
So you don't dare mention the title of a certain play by the Bard of Stratford-on-Avon that has to do with a Scottish lord. So you don't want to tempt the theater
don't
deities.
Tempt the fates. And this is a performance space. So.
That's right. We don't want to mess things up.
That's
but anyway,
right.
We know what you're talking about.
And so I had worked with some alumni from that Sleep No More production on a production of theirs called The Visitation, which took place in a old Dutch settler farmhouse out in Brooklyn. It's the oldest single family residence in New York. It was from the 1600s. Mm. And so we did this immersive show that was kind of similar to The Crucible, where there was a local girl who was accused of witchcraft, and these two priests come to investigate the story. And this was based on a true story. Mm-hmm. And so we did this all over the grounds and in the house. And, you know, the play happens in real time. And audience it's kind of choose your own adventure as an audience member. You can follow that character or you can follow that character. And so I really fell in love with the form then, because it has elements of theater and film, because it's very intimate, because audience members can be 2 feet away from you when you're performing. And I had wanted to create something like that here. And I saw that space at the Sound Conservatory.
That was a Carnegie Library.
It was a beautiful
work of art.
Yeah. Beautiful work. And I asked Andre, and I was like, what are you doing with with this part of the space? And he's like, well, eventually I'm going to turn it into a performance venue. And I said, can you hold off on that and give me through February? And he said, absolutely. So we created this show, and it was, you know, we sold out pretty much the entire run and added shows. And it was just a really wonderful experience. And from my perspective, it was great to kind of bring that style of theater somewhere that hadn't really seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you are not used to old style libraries, they had these things called stacks, which were sort of like a dungeon, sort of like, you know, it was just, and I still remember the one at the old Augustana Library. They were mystical places in a way. Yeah. So I thought that was genius on your part to bring that together. But by then, you had come back to be with Quad City Arts. And that's where I want to really kind of dwell a little bit, because I won't say a misunderstanding, but there's, I think, a lack of appreciation for what Quad City Arts is and what it does. And, you know, we've highlighted, I think, just about every organization in what's called the Quad Cities Cultural Trust. We had its leader, Jen, here not too long ago. But what strikes me about Quad City Arts is it's a different type of organization in that, say, the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, or actually the Putnam, where I was with my grandkids just a couple of days ago. You got to go see that kaleidoscope exhibit. It is so cool.
Thomas is such a great, they're so cool.
But what's different is you don't really charge admission, right? I mean, there are some things you do that where you have to have some financial support. But when you do charge for admission, it's so that those same artists can be in front of school kids for free. And you can have this beautiful art space downtown. So it's a totally different business model. It's not about selling tickets. It's about just creating the resources necessary to share it for free. And I don't think people really appreciate that well enough.
Well, yeah. And I think of what we do as like, we make art happen, you know, and whether that's, and we do, as you alluded to, we do some presenting, but the nuts and bolts of what we do are really about empowering other artists to be able to do their work. You know, whether that's through our Arts Dollars grant program, where, you know, we give away typically about $125,000, $130,000 a year to local artists to create their work. You know, our visiting artist series, we bring artists from all over the world into the schools for assemblies, workshops, engagements, to try to do that. You know, obviously our Metro Arts program, which is...
Well, let's talk about the Metro Arts program, because that's like an entree for our area's youth.
Yes.
To get, and I mean, really energized. So talk about it, please.
Yeah, and it's, I always tell the Metro Arts kid every year, I say, don't tell the other programs, but this is my favorite. We get area youth ages 15 to 21, and we pair them up with lead artists, professional artists in the community. And it's murals is kind of the centerpiece of the program currently, but we also do poetry and filmmaking. We've done theater, dance, sculpture in the past. But we pair them with these lead artists, and then they go out and create typically works of public art. And it's a 5-week paid apprenticeship, you know, which is very important to us. And they're learning both the technical skills of their art, but we also try to teach them those soft business skills of, you know, and sometimes it's as simple as like, I'm going to communicate with you via email and you have to respond via email. But, you know, we work with local organizations that we're doing the projects with. You know, this year we have a project at Every Child. We have one with the city of Davenport over at the River's Edge. We've got one with TMBC Lincoln Center over in Davenport. And so for the first week, the students, you know, they have a meeting with whoever's leading the project at that organization, where the organization says, yeah, this is what we're looking for. And then they spend the week designing, and then they have to do a presentation to the clients and take feedback from the clients. So building those soft professional skills as well as the art. And then they go and they spend 4 weeks on the wall creating the work of art. It's such a valuable thing, you know. And I remember when I moved to New York, getting to New York, and like we had had some classes in college that were kind of our like professional business focused classes. But I got to New York and I was like, where do I begin? Like, how do I actually do this?
Right.
And so I spent a lot of that first year there. I was in the city, like reading business books and advertising books and marketing books to learn how to, because as an actor, like you are your product.
Right.
Like, how do I sell myself? How do I package myself? How do I market myself? And so we try to, and with having them work with these professional artists, they try to instill those skills in the students along the way as well.
Yeah. Well, the Metro Arts Youth Program, Apprenticeship Program, is a fantastic story. And we've got more stories to tell about Quad City Arts. But right now, we're going to step aside for just a moment and hear from that master storyteller, the late Dr. Roald Tweet, because it's time once again for this week's Rock Island Lines. You're listening to The Conversation on WVIK.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. In patches of virgin Illinois woods near Rock Island, one can still find remnants of the Sauk Indian Trail, at least 200 years old. This trail once ran from the nearby Indian village of Sauconuck across Illinois to the tip of Lake Michigan, and from there north to the English fort at Malden, Canada. Eastern Canada had been the ancestral home of the Sauk before they were pushed west by the Iroquois, and they still retained some English loyalties and trade relations there after the American Revolution. These Illinois trail remnants parallel later trails, the railroad that came west from Chicago in 1854, and Interstate 80 built in the 1960s. These three routes provide an object lesson on American culture. The Indian trail is narrow as it threads between the trees. Indian file still means single file, with one foot in front of another rather than side by side, in order to disturb nature as little as possible. The four-lane interstate disturbs nature as it pleases, cutting through hills in order to get from New York to San Francisco without a stop sign. Which should we admire? Americans are often accused of not living up to their ideals, but the problem is we have two sets of dreams: to control nature and to be at one with her, to live in the woods like Thoreau, content with little, and to build the tallest skyscraper in the world. What does dominion over mean? We Americans want it both ways. America the Beautiful sings about Purple Mountain majesties, but it also celebrates alabaster cities gleaming from sea to shining sea, which a cynic might read as urban blight. Several years ago, my family was camping at Mesa Verde near the cliff dwellings. At the next campsite sat a huge camper from New Jersey, also getting away from civilization, but not entirely. As I walked past the camper one evening, the back door was open and inside were five or six people sitting around an artificial electric fireplace so as not to have to be bothered with real smoke. A perfect example of the double vision so common among us all.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And we get to listen to it each and every week on The Conversation, thanks to your support of this public radio station. Head over to wvik.org. It's kind of hard to miss that donate button, but when you hit it, you perpetuate programs like Rock Island Lines and The Conversation. And this week's guest, Ben Goujon, Director of Community Engagement. You know, we were talking about the Metro Arts Apprenticeship Program for youth, but so many other things. I want to give a massive shout out to Dawn Wolford Metallo, because not only is she a practicing artist, you can sometimes see her works around and exhibited, but she coordinates ways for us to see the arts. You know, there's the airport gallery that welcomes people to our community. I'm so proud of that. But earlier this month, she she led a bike ride for some of us to go cruising around and seeing all the amazing outdoor sculptures. Well, not all of them. There's far too many to see in a bike ride. But we went over our a couple of bridges and bike paths. And there's others that you have to go looking for a little more, like downtown Moline. There's some really cool stuff. But we get to bump into art thanks to folks like Dawn and Ben and the whole Quad City Arts team. So how is that part of the philosophy?
Well, yeah. And that, you know, public art is a huge part of what we do. You know, as you mentioned, we have the gallery at the airport and our gallery in downtown Rock Island, which, again, is free for anyone to visit. And that features regional artists from within 250 miles there, both an ongoing exhibit that changes out about every 7 weeks. And then also we have a gift shop there that is all local artists good. So, you know, we always encourage people to come down and visit the gallery. There's an amazing bicycle-themed exhibit there right now with some amazing bike paintings and photos and some really cool old vintage bikes.
Oh, yes.
That Right Cycles help restore and put together that are awesome. You know, and this bike tour that Dawn did was incredible. She's very active in the local cycling scene. So it was just kind of a natural fit for her to bring something like that to the Quad Cities. But, you know, we do so many public art-based projects, the Metro Arts murals, and, you know, we have a poetry group this year that has done free poetry readings and is producing a chapbook. And, you know, we frequently work with our local municipalities to bring public art to life. And that's one of the things that we do our art services where, you know, and I said earlier, like, we make art happen. Someone comes to us and says, hey, we would love to get a mural on this wall, or we would love to have a sculpture. And we can make those things happen. Like, we know how to do that and the processes and can facilitate that process. You know, we've got a big sculpture that we're doing with Moline right now that's going to be installed hopefully sometime later this month or next month. That's going to be the largest sculpture in the Quad Cities. You know, outside of the Leo Villarreal light sculpture.
Is that the one with the, well, we were making flowers.
Yes, the flowers and the butterflies that's going to kind of extend in the area just to the east of the Element Hotel.
Okay.
Up onto that stair tower that's the walkway over the tracks to the Metrolink station.
So thanks to Quad City Arts, my spouse and I got to take part in a program where we learned that that artist's craft a little bit, not all of the secrets, but some of the things that I can't wait to see what that looks like. But I do want to give an additional plug to Bike Worlds. What you mentioned is at the Quad City Arts Center in downtown Rock Island right now. It's there until August 7th. Friends, get over there, especially if you're of an age where you might remember some of those vintage Schwinn bicycles. I think, what was it? The banana split, lemon peel. They were those, they had the gear shifter on the drop bar, and it was very dangerous, but,
but
thanks
to
Right Cycle, they're lovely works of, late mid-century American art and design.
Yeah.
Plus two amazing artists, Ken Urban and Jeff Williams. When you see some of the things that they've done, you're going to be just blown away. I mean, there's an artistry to bicycles. There was actually, I think, an essay on that in the Economist or New York Times this week as the Tour de France gets underway.
Yeah.
But there is a beauty, an aesthetic to them. So get down to the Quad City Arts Center, downtown Rock Island, and check them out. The show is called Bike Worlds, and it's through August 7th. So how do you like that for a plug?
I love it. I love it. And that's the thing, you know, we have so many talented artists in our region, you know, and as I said before, the thing we really try to do is uplift those artists. And we also, you know, we were talking about accessibility, but looking, you know, as you said, presenting is not really our primary thing, but it's looking at the landscape and talking with our community partners and seeing where there are gaps. You know, whether that's in the schools and helping to bring visual arts or performing arts into the schools, or, you know, we're constantly talking with local artists and like, how can we help you? Whether it's, you know, funding through the arts dollars or doing things like Chalk Art Fest or Riversance to give them avenues to display their art.
Well, and I put in a plug for Chalk Art Fest. Unfortunately, we were out of town this year, but that is something not to be missed. It is so cool to come down to Schwiebert Park in Rock Island and see this amazing artistry just right literally under your feet or at your feet. So to do the presenting that you do, of course, you got to get some revenue. So there are some ways to do that. And, you know, I think that... It's funny for me to think that I'm old enough to have been around before there was a Festival of Trees, because it's such a fixture. I mean, I don't think there's a quad citizen who's under 40 who doesn't have memories of growing up going to Festival of Trees. I mean, that's just what you do, in November, December in the Quad Cities.
Yeah, and that Festival of Trees is our biggest fundraiser of the year. Yeah. And I cannot say enough, as someone who is new to the area... You know, relatively, the dedication of the volunteers who for 40 plus years have made that event happen, you know, and it originally started as, Festival of Trees was not part of Quad City Arts, and there was a visiting artist series that was not part of Quad City Arts, and these mostly women got together and said, we want to fund bringing arts into the schools. And so they created Festival of Trees, and, you know, we're here 41 years later. And, you know, at some point all those entities merged and Festival of Trees supports all that programming we do.
Yeah, yeah. And one of my favorite memories, though, is that at the very early days, I was working in the newsroom at WVIK.
Yeah.
It was very, very new. And the organizers, well, we've got a public radio station that plays classical music. We got to have them represented. So we were given a small artificial tree to design. Things are very, you know, now it's a competition to get in there. It's just, would you guys please do this? So Wooten drops it off in the newsroom. And okay, Don, what budget do we have? Budget? You don't get a budget. So we raided the music library. And even then, we were getting, you know, just god-awful recordings of music that were never going to make it to the air.
Sure.
So we decorated this thing with basically CDs because they were shiny and they were new. Nobody knew what those were. And I can't remember else what we put on there, but yeah, there was nothing but sweat equity on that tree, but we were so grateful to be included in the early days of Festival of Trees. It was a riot.
Well, and that, you know, like when we talk about supporting the artists, like a lot of those people who design trees or hearths or, you know, wreaths, whatever element that they participate in, like, that's their creative and artistic outlet.
Yeah.
You know, some of the trees are just absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, and I go for
And so creative.
I go for Paul Van Dyne's model train set. I mean,
yeah, that train set's incredible.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent here. Let's get deeper, if you don't mind, Ben.
But
why is an organization like Quad City Arts important to a community beyond the artists, the artistic community? Why does it have currency, vitality, importance to a place like the Quad Cities?
Yeah, it's because of the art are important in and of themselves in our lives and the way they enrich our lives, the way they help in creative placemaking efforts and economic development, you know. And I always think about, like, when I travel, you know, and it could be somewhere else, like, you know, when I first moved here, I remember driving into Dubuque and seeing, like, all the murals they've got there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this place is cool. I want to spend time here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's public art to help with the economic development of your city or as a private citizen, like, studies after studies have shown the effect of the arts on education and, you know, any industry, even if it's not traditionally the arts, like, employees benefit from having creative thinking skills, having the ability to be flexible and improvisational, for lack of a better word, in their thinking and their demands. Like, and the arts, just arts education breeds that creativity, you know? And I think about, you know, I think back to the old times and, like, when the Renaissance and those people were skilled in many things. Like we have become such a specialized society, and you know, the arts are part of that well-rounded individual, you know, and I always tell people, like, you may not think you're creative or you're an artist, but you can create something and make something, and it doesn't have to be good. You know, I love to paint. I'm a terrible painter, but I love to do it. And just that practice of doing the art and the creative thought process you need and trying to make those work. Like we were talking earlier with rehearsal and the art of seeking the education, like putting your, one of my favorite things as an artist anymore, like as a, is to put myself in an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah.
You know, I feel I get so much growth out of that. And, you know, a lot of the theater projects I've chosen to do since I've been here have been projects where I've said, I don't know if I can do this. And like, that's where I get to grow.
Right.
And so, you know, it's the same with painting or a sculpture or doing an art workshop. With it, it could be a paint night anywhere. Push yourselves, get out and.
Yeah. Well, there's, you're touching on something else here, which is the communal aspect of it, right? So it's, we can sit in our homes and we can watch plays, movies, operas, all kinds of things. We can watch YouTube videos that will teach us to paint, and we can get some canvases and do that. There's something about the community aspect though. So for, while you're talking, I'm just thinking of, there's a work of music by a composer named Bedřich Smetana, the Moldau. And it's a piece that's just very emotional for me. And I don't need to get into that, but it's something entirely different to go to the Quad City Symphony Orchestra and hear it performed live, which they've done a couple of times in my lifetime, and to experience that with other people. It's like the making. When Jenny and I got to go to that workshop that I think Dawn was a part of making, so we were making these little flower petals that are tied to the Moline installation that's coming up. This is this is very powerful. It's a magnification of whatever impact it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to you and your colleagues for making it possible to for us. I'm going to throw another quote. This is from a favorite poet of mine, who's local, and I don't think she would mind if I expand it. But Rebecca Wee, former Quad Cities Poet Laureate, which was at one time organized by the Literary Arts Committee at Quad City Arts, she said this of poetry, but I think it's true of any arts. She said, poetry is one of the most humane ways for us to cope with what we have no tools for. And I would say by extension, that's true of all the arts. So on behalf of the patrons who need those tools, thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's our pleasure. Like it's, we deserve art, you know, art oftentimes gets pushed aside or cut or the last thing,
but
you know, when we look at, Robin Williams, and I don't know if he was quoting someone, but in Dead Poets Society, says something to the effect of art is what makes life worth worth living.
Yeah.
You know?
And we have a great agency in our community that does that for us. Now, before I let you go, just very quickly, because we're running out of time.
Okay.
What are you reading lately? What do you want to recommend to us or some media that you're consuming?
Oh, man. I just read Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. It won the Pulitzer a couple years ago, and I picked it up at a used bookstore, and it was breathtaking. It was a beautiful novel, kind of a David Copperfield spinoff, but set in rural Kentucky in the early 2000s. That was incredible. And I also just read, I also enjoy cycling. Bike Snob NYC is a very fun cycling writer, and I read his book about his European travels. So that's what I'm doing now.
Thank you. I want to thank you for those recommendations and for your time, but I'm afraid that's going to have to do it for this week. Thanks once again to my guest, Ben Goujon, Director of Community Engagement for Quad City Arts. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Grateful to have you here. And remember, friends, you can catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK. Of course, Saturday morning live at 10 o'clock. And that's right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But you also get a rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8, right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at wvik.org. Just look for us under the podcast tab. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for the conversation on WVIK, when our guest will be Leslie Dupree, a journalist, all about creator, but also a docent at the Figge Art Museum. She'll have some fun stories to share with us. We hope you'll stay tuned now as your public radio station continues to enrich, enliven, and enlighten. Thanks for tuning into the conversation. See you next week.
You've been listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. Support for WVIK comes from Impact Life, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Learn about the blood center's name and the need for blood products and services at bloodcenter.org. And WVIK operations are also partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council. Online at WVIK.org or with the WVIK app. On the radio at WVIK 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island. And at 95.9 FM K240 DZ Dubuque. You're tuned to the Quad Cities NPR station, WVIK.